Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri. Normally on Beyond the Uniform, I interview military veterans about their civilian career. My goal is to give anyone in the military a sense of all the different wide variety of career options out there and some tactical advice on different ways they might achieve different career paths. Today I'm going to try something different, and we're just going to dive right in on this. So it is a rainy Sunday here in Denver, and Rebecca's out with a friend. My trusty dog Hemingway is right by my side, chewing on a bone. You might hear him if he acts up in a little bit. I wanted to try something that I'm going to call a skills episode, and this is the first official episode trying this out. In all honesty, if you were to look back, there's two episodes I've done that were in this vein. The first one was episode 86, where I interviewed author Cal Newport about his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You. Highly recommend you check that out, as well as episode 96, where I did a book review of Cal Newport's other book, Deep Work, and about how to really cultivate a practice of working intensely and efficiently on the highest leverage items in whatever job you do. So definitely send me feedback. You can do that at beyondtheuniform.io in the show notes in comments. You can tweet, you can post to Facebook, you can email me at justin@beyondtheuniform.io. Would really like feedback on if this sort of concept is helpful as a complement to the interviews. So today's topic I'm going to be talking about is something that's been very helpful in my life. It's called nonviolent communication, which first off is an awful name for this. I would call it maybe needs-based communication or empathetic communication. The reason I think that this is helpful is three things. First of all, as a communications tool, I actually brought someone in at my company Storybox to do this training with our team, and it was very helpful as a communication tool amongst our team. Second, I think it's helpful in relationships, personal and your relationship with a partner, of just learning how to better communicate with them. And I'll share some specific examples of that in a little bit. Third is probably the most important, which is your connection with yourself. And I believe that this work is incredibly helpful in figuring out what it is that you need, what it is you want to do. And I think it's also very helpful with yourself with stress and reducing stress in your work life. So for veterans and members of active duty who are listening, here's a few ways you might look at this episode. First of all, vets in general excel at connecting with other people and at managing stress. And so you might view this work as a potential tool to add to your toolkit in working with others and in managing stress. A second reason for vets is that one of the themes that's come up in a lot of the interviews I've done is that sometimes veterans can have a blind spot around empathy. That can be something that inhibits their success in a civilian career when they first transition. And so this is a very tactical way to address that head on and to build up empathy. And then the third is around stress. And I know that if you're listening to this and you've been in the military or you are in the military is exceptionally effective at building warriors to endure unimaginable stress and incomprehensible danger. And at the same time, my experience outside of the military is that the stress that I experienced in the civilian workforce has been different than the stress I experienced in my military service. And there's been a lot of stress that I've experienced in my civilian career that related more, not around life or death, but more around my identity, who I am, what I'm capable of, what I'm worth. My identity as a provider. Can I take care of my wife as I think of having kids? Can I provide for them? These aspects of stress are, on the one hand, there's such a fraction of the stress that you face in the military, and at the same time, they're very real, and they very, very much, in my experience at least, have affected who I am and just my ability to perform at a peak potential. And so I think it's valuable. Although you have experienced a lot of stress in your military service, I think that this is a different type of stress, and I think these tools can really help you with that. So let's dive into nonviolent communication. So like I said, I think it's probably more accurate to call this needs-based communication or empathetic communication. The work was started by Marshall Rosenberg. I came to it through one of his, you know, chief people that he worked with, John Kenyon. Marshall Rosenberg passed away a few years ago. But the whole idea here is that we all have feelings, and that those feelings are a gateway to uncovering a set of universal needs. You know, we're all different as people, but at the core, we have basic needs that are the same. And if you can identify that feeling, that's the gateway to uncover the need underneath it. And if you uncover the need, you can develop strategies to meet those needs. Or in a group setting, you can identify strategies that are going to meet more of the needs of the group. Here's a specific example from a relationship with my relationship with my wife, Rebecca. This is maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I came home from work and I was just fried from an intense day of work. And I come through the door, Rebecca immediately wants to start to talk. And, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. A lot comes up. You know, probably for me, the only thing I can identify is anger and frustration. But thanks to this work, was able to slow down and identify I was feeling flustered. And we sat down and we had a conversation around feelings and needs. And literally, we worked through this and in maybe 3 to 4 minutes, decided like, okay, Rebecca has right now a need for connection. She wants to feel connected to me. She has a need for self-expression. She wants to tell me everything that occurred to her in very, very minute detail about her day. And, you know, I, on the other hand, as we talked through this, I had a need for freedom. I had a need for autonomy. I had a need for choice. And so what we decided was I was going to pick a bar and we were going to go to that bar that kind of met my need for autonomy and choice and freedom. And we were going to go there, we're going to grab a drink, and we're just going to sit and take an hour and just catch up and hang out. And that would meet her need for connection and for self-expression. So it's a very simple example, but what I'm trying to illustrate is, at least in our marriage, this is something that would probably have led to an argument and disconnection. And through these tools, we're able to figure out what were the needs and actually come up with a strategy that actually, in this case, met both of our needs. And I'll go through some work examples and other examples as well as we go along. But here's the overview of the work. So we're going to talk about three main things. The first is self-connection. It's for those of you who are already into meditation, it's a very similar process. We'll talk about feelings, and then we'll talk about needs. And I think that we'll start with this first part of self-connection. So I actually, for the last over a year now, I meet every single Monday night for 90 minutes for a phone call with a group of between 2 or 4 other people. We get together every single week on a call, and we literally practice this. And I'm very busy, but I think that that's a sign that I've really put a lot of weight on this work because I've seen how powerful it is in my professional and in my personal life. And so on this 90-minute call, the first thing that we always do is we take 5 minutes for what we call like a self-connection practice. And that's literally, you know, all of us are just coming straight from our day and we take 5 minutes to just, you know, for some of us that's meditation, for others it's just literally checking in, and for some of us it's the first chance to check in the entire day. You know, in the past 12 hours, it's honestly the first time to take a breath and see what's going on. And one of the things that's most surprising for me almost every single time in this self-connection is that oftentimes what I think is going on for me isn't what actually is going on as I make some space and actually am curious about what I'm actually feeling in that moment. I've had so many times where I come in and I'm thinking in my head, like, man, this was a stressful day. I bet that's what's going to come up for me is these feelings of stress and overwhelm and just anger. And then I settle in, and after, you know, a minute or two, the dust settles, and I kind of check in, and what I realize is I'm actually feeling excitement. I'm feeling growth. I'm feeling charged and energized. And I wanted to share that because I think it's such a powerful practice that even in just a few minutes, whether you call it meditation or self-connection, even in just a few minutes, you can start to challenge what your brain is thinking versus what actually is going on. And I think that's powerful, especially for, you know, in any working environment, you'll get into a funk, you'll get into a depression, you'll get sad, you'll get angry, you'll get distracted. And oftentimes these are emotions that we experience for a very brief time. But then our mind, we cling to that. We cling and think that that's going on when in fact that's really passed on. And we're just, I don't know if that makes sense, but we're kind of sitting with these emotions that aren't actually there. And that can be the converse too. Sometimes you might think that you're really positive and you make room and you might feel like, oh, I don't know where this is coming from, but I actually feel really sad or I feel really de-energized. And I know, you know, I'm 10 years out from the military right now. I can only imagine, you know, if my submarine self was listening to me right now or in that active duty context, I'm sure I'd have a derisive joke or a snide comment to say about this whole thought of tapping into feelings. But stay with me. I think there's so much power here in what we're talking about, in this framework of applying this and deconstructing what's going on in you to really fine tune you, to give you that tune up, to be at your peak performance, to really make sure that you're able to just sprint all out without running any sort of obstacle. So that's the basics of the self-connection. It's just giving yourself room to start to identify the next thing we're going to talk about, which is feelings. And I'm going to put a link on the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io. John Kenyon, the guy who I came to this work through, has a nice sheet here of it's probably over 50 different feelings categorized around. And, you know, probably for most of you, and I'm going to say most people in the military, I'll go out on a limb on, and I'm going to say especially for guys, not to stereotype, but my experience with myself and with others is that we as men are not as adept at identifying feelings. I think that women have a little bit of an edge on this. Actually, I think they have a lot of an edge on this. So, you know, for myself, when I first started this work, I would say I had a pretty limited palette of emotions. I think I definitely knew what anger felt like, probably loneliness and frustration, love I felt. But I would say, you know, maybe half a dozen different emotions that I could kind of tune into and feel like, yes, I know what that feels like. And as you look at this sheet online or if you download it through the website, I think that the goal is to, or at least for me, one of the goals was to really open up to experience more of these feelings, both good and bad, being able to tune in and have a broader vocabulary, having a broader palette of, you know, tuning in of what does excitement feel like and appreciation, what does bliss and satisfaction and impatience and pessimism, such a wide variety. And my experience has been in using this list, once you're able to more fine tune into the feelings you're experiencing, you're one, it dissipates them, it kind of takes a little bit of the edge off of them, but second, as we'll get into next, it really helps you undercover the meat of this, which is what are the needs that are driving that, what is that an indication of. And so honestly, when I first started this, I would have this sheet with me and I would try two or three times throughout the day to just try and check in and see, you know, literally looking over this list, trying to feel into my body and see which of these feelings really resonated. And it sounds strange, but I would challenge you, if you take a look at this list at any moment in your day, I think that there are some words that just resonate, some words that connect with you and that just sink in. And when I do this work in practice with other people, we'll get into this in a second more on the empathy side, you really feel the words land. You know, in a typical exercise, I would just kind of talk for 5 minutes about what's going on in my life and my day, what I'm feeling, what I felt in that self-connection. And the first step that someone would take, and, you know, we would take a pause and someone would reflect what they'd heard. And they would say like, hey, I'm guessing it sounded like you're feeling exhausted or you're feeling fatigued or you're feeling refreshed. And it's amazing that as they start to say these words, you can actually feel like, oh man, that's, you know, I didn't realize it, but I actually am feeling exhausted. It kind of helps you tune in and pinpoint what those emotions are that you're feeling. A quick example, when I first met Rebecca, now maybe 5 years ago, she would call me at work and I would just be stressed out of my head. Early stage startup, just extremely stressed out. And, you know, she would say like, "Hey, what did you have for breakfast?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I didn't eat breakfast." She's like, "Okay, what did you have for lunch?" "Oh, I haven't eaten lunch yet." And she'd say like, "Okay, look, hang up, go eat something, and then call me back." And it was like, you know, it was literally building up this cycle that, you know, when I started to feel frustrated, I would realize like, okay, hunger is one of those things on my checklist. Have I eaten recently? Okay, that's a core need. I need to go eat. And now over time, I've built up that muscle where I'm like, you know, I'm eating more regularly and I know when I'm hungry. But I think it's just like that. It's building up this process of trying to find those feelings, and we'll get into the needs in just a second. So you're starting to build up a familiarity for these. And at first, I think for most of us, this feels pretty strange. It kind of feels somewhat out there. But as you, you know, give yourself a little bit of room to experiment with this, I think you'll start to notice the starting point of an unraveling and a release that comes with identifying these feelings. And in particular, we'll give an example in the needs section in a work context. You know, it's one thing to do this with one person, but in a team of people, then you start to uncover all sorts of this orchestra of emotions going on and ways in which different feelings and emotions trigger other people, and it becomes complicated. And so it's very powerful if you can do this with yourself and then bring that into a group setting, which we'll talk about in a second. I think the other part of this is, you know, I talked about that example with hunger. I think for myself, and I would imagine for a lot of other men and women, this can be the case with emotion. So when I was first in relationship with Rebecca, you know, I would just start to notice that I was feeling overwhelmed or feeling angry when I was at about maybe, let's say, 80% of my capacity. You know, if this is a thermometer, this is the heat range at which this thermometer is just about to explode. And in our relationship, a lot of times I would reach that point of 100% where I just explode and I go on a tirade and I'm extremely angry. And then, you know, in the postmortem, as we kind of repaired, would start to piece through and be like, "Hey, you know what? I was just feeling, I think in retrospect, I was feeling exhausted and I just really needed some space and I needed some, you know, just some time to just check out and rejuvenate before engaging." And so my goal in this work was like, how can I uncover that feeling when I'm at the 10 or 20% point rather than waiting for it to build to the 80 or 100% point, at which point you get into an argument or you explode or you get into less productive, less skillful ways of dealing with something. And, you know, particularly with relationships, I heard this great quote. I think it's something like every 1 minute of an argument needs 9 minutes of repair or something like that. And so strictly from a life efficiency point, it's like, man, I want to spend less of my life in that repair mode. If it's a 9-to-1, if I can avoid an argument or anticipate it, I can save myself half an hour, an hour of unnecessary time repairing something if I can identify it before it becomes a problem. And, you know, another thing I'll say in this, I worked with this executive coach years ago, and she would say with work, she would say, "Justin, unspoken fears are the termites of the soul." I love that phrase. Unspoken fears are the termites of the soul. And it's been very true in my professional life. A lot of times at work in this early stage startup, I would feel overwhelmed and I would feel just completely on edge. And as I started to make a list or to talk to someone, as I would journal down, like, what am I feeling? What are my fears? And I'd start to write them out. Almost always I would find, once I had them on paper, I'm like, that's not a lot. You know, it feels like a lot. But then when I look at it, there's not a lot of things that I'm afraid of. And more importantly, once I would list them down, I could say, "Hey, you know, there's 5 fears on here. 3 of them are so outside of the world of possibility. I don't need to really worry about those. And 2 of these are actually legitimate. Let me actually come up with tactics to address those two legitimate fears. And so that's part of what I think of with this work as well, of identifying these feelings allows you then to get a little bit more tactical. And I think that as members of the armed forces, as veterans, we excel at tactics, we excel at operations. And so this is almost like a roadmap. It's almost like this topography to figure out the feelings so you can come up with those tactics. One last thing that I'll say of on this, on the feelings piece before we get into the meat of this with needs is, you know, I've done a lot of this work now over the last couple of years, and I'll do it in these weekend sessions too of practicing with people. And what's so surprising with me as I do this with people is oftentimes when I'm, you know, helping them figure out what the feelings are, when we pinpoint it, there is a physical release. Like you see the person sigh, you see the person's shoulders slump, you see the person physically, even if they don't notice it, you see them physically respond to identifying that need. And I've definitely, you know, on the flip side, I've experienced that too. It's like, I think there's something that's so much more potent, and it's like this unharnessed energy when there's this unknown feeling or this unknown fear. And then once you identify it, once you give a name to it, it really takes so much of that energy out of it and really dampens it in a way that's settling, in a way that puts you in a state to then problem solve. Rather than, you know, boxing at shadows, you're in a spot where you're like, huh, I'm feeling afraid, I'm feeling terrified, I'm feeling lonely, or I'm feeling embarrassed, or I'm feeling absorbed, I'm feeling energized, I'm feeling curious and eager. Once you have a pinpoint on that, it puts you in a better spot to then move on to the next part, the meat of this whole work, which is the needs. And, you know, in this work, the framework for this work is that there's feelings and they're gateways to the needs that lie underneath. And also on beyondtheuniform.io, I have a link to a sheet that, just like for feelings, there's different needs: well-being, connection, expression. And then it breaks these needs down further: safety, sustenance, play, community, empathy, love, freedom, honesty, meaning. There's a lot more there. And let me give you maybe a concrete example, a work example from this. And this one was funny because this was maybe 10 minutes before we as a company were going to meet with this coach I had brought in to teach us about nonviolent communication. And me and my colleague Jake, he's my, you know, number two guy. We'd worked together for years. I think I had an extreme amount of trust and love for him. And we were getting into this like very heated argument over, you know, he was running sales and he was trying to close a deal. And there was a tremendous amount of friction around this. And this is, you know, a typical startup environment. So it's open office space. And so everyone is now party to this argument and this like fighting about how to handle this. And so, you know, literally the guy's like waiting in the room for us, the conference room, and we're like 5 minutes late because we're like so entangled in this argument. And we go in there, and obviously this whole cloud over our heads follows us in. And in the course of doing this work together, we started to play with the needs. And, you know, what we realized is that Jake, you know, he was in this sales position and he's trying to close a deal. He had this need for contribution, to contribute to our company's growth. He had a need for growth, you know, not only growing his personal income, but also growing as a salesperson. And he had this need for excitement, the excitement and exhilaration that goes along with closing a deal and the camaraderie that that builds, the connection with others that that builds. I, on the other hand, as the CEO and doing a lot of work with client support, I was scared that he was selling to someone and we wouldn't be able to fulfill what they were looking for, that they were maybe looking for more than we could offer. And so my needs were around safety for the company. My need was for care for our clients and care for us as a company and our reputation of not ever wanting to underperform or not meet someone's expectations. And so, you know, as we identified this on both sides, you know, it's, you could just see it click. You could see it click for both of us. And it's like, oh man, I see where you're coming from. I think that a lot of times in these situations and work, we can get into this this enemy image approach of seeing the other person. It's like, what are they trying to do? They're trying to destroy our team, our organization, our company. But we understood each other's, and more importantly, we understood the needs that were driving our actions. And it changed everything. Like, we went out of there, and literally within 10 minutes, we came up with a strategy that would allow him to close the deal while at the same time meeting my need for safety and care. And so I hope that lands in terms of just a concrete example of one example in a work setting of being able to figure out the different needs of the group. And I think one thing that's powerful in this work, in this framework, is, you know, we all have needs. And every person's needs matter. It's, you know, once we know those needs, we can try to find and employ a strategy that's going to meet the most needs possible. And it's not that you're going to always meet all of your needs, all of your team's needs, all of your clients' needs, but the goal is to meet as many needs as possible. And those of you who have studied negotiations or maybe looked at the book like Getting to Yes, a lot of the critical work in negotiations is how can we figure out needs, you know, to put it in this framework, how can we figure out needs? And oftentimes it's called expanding the pie of like, how can we figure out a way? Like, sometimes it's not approaching a negotiations as a zero sum. It's not always the case that if the person I'm negotiating with gets more, I get less. Because if I want different things than they do, then we can both maximize what we get out of this. And so that's what I love about this work. It's very similar to negotiation. It's uncovering these needs and then developing strategies to meet everyone's needs. So the last part of this is, maybe I'll just talk about building up empathy. And again, I think this is so vital because it has come up on so many different interviews that that's a weak point for a lot of veterans. That's an area that's not stretched and grown a lot while on active duty. And I think it's more and more a skill that's either advantageous in the workforce or in many areas it's a prerequisite. Like, you need to be empathetic. A product manager needs to empathize with the customer to design a product to meet their needs. Any leader needs to empathize with their team to be able to lead them effectively. A salesperson needs to be able to empathize with the person to whom they're selling, to be able to understand their pain points and their needs and what's going on for them. So the great thing about this is that in a lot of this work and research, empathy, it's just a muscle. It's just like anything else. Through practice, through repetition, you can build up this muscle of empathy. And that has been, you know, I'll end with some resources for you, but that's been the driving force behind me doing this 90-minute call every single week around nonviolent communication, around this work, is trying to figure out how to identify my own needs and the needs of others and, you know, be able to empathize with them more. What's really amazing for me is, you know, having done this work for several years now, there is a tremendous power, especially when you're working with someone else, of speaking with someone who's really present. There's an exercise when I first started doing this work where they would literally have one person talk and the other person for 3 minutes, you'd have a 3-minute timer, the other person couldn't do anything. They couldn't verbally agree, they couldn't nod along or non-verbally agree. And you start to realize how often when you're listening to someone, how often you're not really listening. How often you're not being fully present with them. How often you're thinking about what you're going to say next, or you're thinking about what you have to do for work, or you're thinking about email or whatever else. And I think that's part of the power of meditation or a self-connection practice, is building up a muscle to be able to just be present with someone and really show up and listen to them. And if you've experienced that, you notice like you really, there's a shift in that communication. I've seen this in sales meetings as well. Like, when you really are present with someone, And I've actually done this in client meetings. I've done this in sales meetings. It's like literally stopping the person saying like, okay, great. You know, you said a lot there. Let me just make sure I understand. It sounded like you're really frustrated because you, in the past, you've worked with people and you've spent a lot of time investing in a technology. And then that team that you invested in wasn't there to support you when you needed them. And so I'm guessing that that was very frustrating. I'm guessing that that really made you feel isolated and really threatened the safety of your company and your team. And there's like, again, there's that like audible, like, oh yeah, that's so right. And you see the person slow down and settle in and they feel heard. They feel seen. And I think that's one of the powers of this work with empathy is, you know, how can I be with someone in a professional or in a personal level? How can I be with them? And it's not about me agreeing with them. It's not about me agreeing with what they're saying, their viewpoint on the world, their viewpoint on a project. It's not about that, but it's like until the other person feels heard, they're not going to be able to listen. They're not going to be able to have a dialogue. And I'm sure many of you can relate, anyone who's been in a relationship, you know, there's those times where you've probably experienced it yourself. Like, it's like until your partner or the person you're talking to has heard you, the conversation's not going anywhere. And you've probably seen that with, you know, on the other side where you're not going to be able to kind of move the ball forward in the conversation until that person feels seen and validated. Or if you've ever felt stuck in a conversation where you're like, why are you repeating the same thing 1,000 times? I've heard you. You're saying it 1,000 different ways. I hear you. They're saying that because they're not heard. They're not feeling empathized with. And so, you know, what I like about this work is it's trying to build up that muscle to make that other person feel heard. And then once they're heard, you can really enter into a meaningful dialogue. And whether that's about a project, a product, whether that's about sales, whether that's about a personal relationship. One of the other things I love about this work, and if you've heard me talk about coaching, it's a very similar take. What I love about this work is that it's not about, if you're doing this work with another person, it's not about them having the answers. And I'm starting to believe more and more that like no one else has the answers. This, you know, we're all so different. We all have such specific needs and feelings. Like no one's going to tell me what I need to do. But oftentimes in this work, it's like having someone, I always actually picture like spelunking, you know, someone's feeding out the rope. You're like diving into this cave and they're feeding out this rope that allows you to go deeper into this cave and deeper into exploration. And there's something about having them reflect what they're hearing that oftentimes for me makes me like come to the conclusion. Just this last week, I was on a call with someone doing this work, and literally I'm just like venting. I had like a big conversation I needed to have with someone that was going to be contentious, and I was walking through that. And, you know, I'm venting for like 10 minutes, and the other person, all they're doing is just reflecting what they heard and maybe guessing at feelings and guessing at needs. And when they guess wrong, it's just as valuable as when they guess right. It's like, no, it's not, I'm not looking for connection. But, you know, actually when you said that, it made me realize I'm looking for self-expression. I'm really needing to really express myself here. And what I found is that so often when someone reflects back to me what I've said, there's so many times where I don't even remember saying it. Where it's like, wow, like I don't even remember I said that, but that's now that I hear you say that, I'm realizing how much anger I have towards this person. And I don't think I even realized how much anger and frustration I have at this person until now. And that, you know, kind of gives you something to work on. So I guess that's the bulk of what I wanted to talk about. One last thing is that if you're looking to practice this work, it's something, you know, there's so many free resources on YouTube. If you type in nonviolent communication or NVC, you'll find a lot of free videos of varying quality about this topic. A lot of them are short. Some of them will feature on or focus on doing this work with children, which is incredibly powerful. You know, letting the kid know that they're seen and trying to help them uncover that feeling or need is incredibly valuable. You'll see people do it in work context and relationship contexts. If you would like to go deeper, there's many books on NVC. I'll link to some of them in the show notes. In almost every major area, there are nonviolent communication groups. I've done that in at various times in my life. That's kind of helpful to practice these skills and learn from someone. There's NVC online courses. I'll put links to that as well. I'd highly recommend John Kenyon. I'll put a link there as well. He does periodic online courses about this as well. And then a group that I did for a year is called Mediate Your Life. It's literally 3 4-day weekends. I mean, like 9 a.m. till 10 at night, 4 days doing this 3 times a year. It's just an incredible way to develop this as a skill. And I imagine for most of you listening, this is pretty antithetical to a lot of your work environment right now. I think it's more in line with the work environment you're going to. And while even in the civilian world, this might be a little bit more extreme, it might be more of like CrossFit for emotions. I think that it's a great way if you want to really efficiently get at building up empathy, really efficiently getting at facilitating productive communication in a team, in your life, and in your relationship. I think it's an incredible tool. So that's all for today. I'll be back later this week with the normal format of just interviews, but really curious to hear your thoughts on if this sort of format is helpful, taking a deeper dive into either a book or a specific skill set, and then giving you more resources for that. So check out the show notes at beyonduniform.io, and let me know your feedback on this, and I hope it helps. Have a great week.